Hi, everybody, and welcome to a Gem of a Secret podcast. My name is Coco Gem Holiday. Today, I decided to do a little bit more of a bit of a lazier look than I normally do. So instead of just a trash bag look that I was normally wearing, I decided to actually wear a belt with it. I cut in some holes in it so I can look like a California raisin. Yeah, so that's my look today. So I have another interview planned for you all today, but before we get into that, I wanted to talk about something kind of serious. It seems that when we talk about drag not being a crime, that folks are really confused about what's actually happening when we're talking about these issues. And a lot of folks really do believe that reading a storybook to children at a library is problematic. They think that having an all-ages drag brunch is problematic because drag queens are inherently sexual and adult creatures, and we all know that's not true. And I know I spoke about this on an earlier episode of the podcast, but I wanted to get a little bit more nitty-gritty real quick. What's really dangerous is that when we conflate art with like sexual predators and rapists and abusers and things like that, it doesn't actually let people see what the art actually is. And, you know, drag is just gender expression and illusion coming together for performative art pieces. Like, it's just living art. And it's really sad that folks are trying to deny their kids of this. So drag isn't a crime. It shouldn't have ever been a crime. I mean, that means like watching Mrs. Doubtfire would have been a crime. That means watching like Priscilla Queen of the Desert is a crime. That would be like Tu Wong Fu is a crime. This would be Bugs Bunny is a crime. Like, you know, just all of these things would have to be considered a crime. And these are things that are ingrained into our society. Him from the Powerpuff Girls would be considered a crime. And I just wanted to get this message out here because it really does suck that when we think about the grand scheme of what they're trying to block, it's like blocking access to entertainment and art and potentially something that could make them a little bit more open-minded. I guess bottom line is, why are they so afraid of being open-minded? Well, and I always say right before our break, how are you doing, listeners? Let me know in the comments. You know, when it comes to drag, a lot of us were exposed to it because of the Rocky Horror Picture Show. And you know what's even cooler than that? They sometimes do shadow casts of Rocky Horror all over the city. Specifically speaking, Marla Darling presents the Rocky Horror Lavender Show at Clinton Street Theater. Join Marla's cast of queer, trans, and BIPOC individuals as they present the original Midnight Mass, the Rocky Horror Picture Show, at the historic Clinton Street Theater. Show dates are July 29th, September 30th, and October 27th. Tickets are available at cstpdx.com. That is cstpdx.com. Don't dream it, be it.
It's a podcast. Check it out. Tune into what they tell you podcast.
Check it out. All right, everybody, and we are back, and welcoming to my stage slash my podcast is the one and only Rob the Builder.
Hello, hello. How are you today, Coco?
I'm doing so good. I'm doing so fantastic, and I'm so pretty. It's funny because I don't actually know what I'm saying in the beginning part of this podcast yet. So hopefully it's something jovial because we were like, wow, that was a really sad subject before she brought Rob on.
Well, I think that you always have something amazing to say, and I always appreciate listening to your podcast and just kind of hearing, like, because we can talk, you know, as much as we want at bars and at venues and at shows, but hearing kind of your just unfiltered thoughts and opinions and how nuanced and kind of, like, deep they are is just kind of, and I just really enjoy hearing it. I will never stop telling you how much I enjoy listening to you speak.
Thank you. That is so nice, Rob. It really is. It means a lot to me because this podcast means a lot to me. But so my listeners who I'm talking to, this is Rob DeBuilder. Rob, go ahead and tell the kids how long you've been performing and where your drag name comes from.
Yeah, so I've been performing, on and off since 2019, but I did a little bit of drag before that when I was in college, doing a couple of pop-up college shows and stuff. But Rob DeBuilder comes from, it's a play on the child kids character Bob the Builder. And everybody knows that song. I'm not going to sing it. But Rob, but Rob in essence is, he's I kind of, my partner kind of nicknamed him a Fisher Price drag king. So I take a lot of kind of inspiration from like youth and nostalgia and children's toys, and kind of take a really like non-toxic Crayola approach to masculinity in terms of what drag kinging is.
Sure. No, that's fine. And so what inspires you with drag? Like, what do you feel like is a reason that you would want to do this for another 5 or 10 years?
My approach and inspiration is kind of just having fun. I know that's a very like boring answer, but I really kind of do it for the entertainer aspect of things and just to express myself. I have a degree. I have a bachelor's of fine art in photography and video. And
really?
I do. Yeah. Graduated in 2016 from Montserrat College of Art in Beverly, Massachusetts.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I'm a masshole through and through.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, no, and I basically majored in photo video, and I minored in sculpture. But the realistic kind of side of things is that it was a lot more not diverse, or it's a lot more of an inclusive kind of all encompassing concentration at this particular mm-hmm. school, where I didn't just focus on photography, or not just video, or not just sculpture. I kind of did a little bit of everything. And I had actually been a professional photographer for a couple of years. And I was so dead set on doing it and like the commercial side of things for a couple of years. And through various things, kind of just fizzled out, and decided to when I was getting ready to come out here to Portland and kind of figuring out what the next step of my life was, decided to go into tech. And I ended up getting an IT certificate to kind of go into tech. And now I work in tech manufacturing, which is pretty cool. So
that's cool. That's really cool. Wait, when did you get your certificate?
I got my CompTIA A+ back in last year, like March of last year.
I want to do that too.
You don't have an IT certificate?
Well, no, not really.
So
my boy job is I am an IT manager at a bank, because I have my master's degree in IT management. And so like, but I want to get more certs and certificates and like kind of boost up my knowledge and make me more of a well-rounded technician. Mm-hmm. Even though in the managerial seat, I don't get to tinker as much as I used to. But I don't know. I believe in like, so as drag artists, we tend to negate our out of drag selves. Sometimes because like we get like wrapped up in the high life and, you know, and I don't want to necessarily lose the aspects of my out of drag persona and what makes that person great. And so I still want to be able to have projects for that side of myself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was going to say, So the reason why I like to do drag and continue into that is because it's a way to continue practicing my art. And cause I had a really, big, how do I word this? It took a lot of pride to realize that I couldn't make it as a professional photographer or a professional artist. You know, I was very dead set on this from like high school, because I had always done photography. You know, I graduated the top of my class in college, and was really good at it, and still am, hopefully. Mm-hmm. And to realize that it just wasn't working out for me was a big pill to swallow. And I had kind of been so dead set on not admitting defeat or kind of proving people wrong, because I'd kind of felt like a lot of people were kind of growing up, you know, people were kind of felt like people were kind of out, not out to get me, but let me reword that. I had to prove a lot of people wrong with who I was, you know, given my background as a trans man. Had to kind of fight for myself and you know, I had a lot of pride in my accomplishments and my degree, you know, and as much as we don't want to subscribe to, you know, big academia and what, you know, pieces of paper matter, you know, it meant a lot to me to have to give that up, basically. Felt like I was giving up on my dream to give up my photography and to go into tech. But, you know, I still do that now, and I still do photography. So I still make art, which is really cool.
So with your photography, were you like landscapes, or were you like portraits, or like, or people, or what did you like about photography?
I did a lot of like event stuff, like people say weddings, and like weddings were money, but I don't like working with brides and grooms or brides and brides or grooms and grooms and wedding parties. However you want to encompass that. And I've had a couple of people kind of, you know, I mostly focused on, you know, doing queer weddings at the end of it. But I wouldn't do any networking. People would kind of, I would, if somebody that I knew, you know, personally, or if another queer party reached out to me, I would happily shoot their wedding. But events, I do a lot of documentaries as well, or like short documentaries working with small businesses. I have a background in marketing as well. So a lot of like commercial, like, not entrepreneurial stuff, but like I work really well with like small businesses and kind of like nonprofit side of things as well. So yeah, now I worked at a I also worked at a marketing department for a grocery store chain as their assistant photographer. That was last kind of photography thing that I did. I got to help take pictures of food all day, which was a lot of fun.
That is kind of cool.
Yeah.
Wow. No, that's really different.
Got a lot of really good steaks out of that.
Oh my, I bet. So I kind of, so when did you come out as trans? Like when did you publicly, I guess let's do the family first. And then when did you come out publicly?
Yeah. So for my coming out story, so we got to start with me coming out as gay, as a lesbian, because I was born a girl. So I came out as gay or liking girls of some capacity to my parents when I was like 7, and they said, yeah, we knew since you were like 5. And I was like, great. I was a little tomboy, you know, it was like Legos and construction toys and Tonka trucks and whatnot. And I was very fortunate enough to grow up in a very liberal a supportive family. I'm a group.
Oh God, I hate you.
I know. I'm sorry.
That's fine. Continue on. I'm just gonna cry in the corner.
Growing up, you know, in suburban Boston, with my mother, who, you know, both my parents are basically hippies. My dad has long, dirty blonde hair down his back and a big beard. He's like like the old school software engineer. Like that. Yeah. You know, that crowd. And my mother is a very kind of, flamboyant, outspoken. Hopefully you'll meet her soon. She'll be coming to visit, in the fall, but, she's a firecracker and I love her so much. But both my parents love me a lot and they support me so much. And my sister is also married to a trans man. So my whole family is just queer in some capacity. Having that support network has been really helpful. But anyways, so fast forward to me coming out as trans, I guess. So when I was 14, 15, I started to attend basically kind of like the SMERC of Boston. It's called BAGLY, the Boston Alliance of Queer and Questioning Youth. And it's like a general queer youth network community. And started to kind of attend their, they had affinity groups, you know, like men of sex with men and men of sex with women, and we kind of also had like the trans masculine group as well. I started to go into that one just because I didn't really feel like I fit any of those other ones. And through that, kind of started to question my gender identity and kind of realized, oh, okay, I think this makes sense, you know. And this was back in 2008, 2009, and I came out as genderqueer. Which was the term back then for basically what is basically the modern non-binary. I started kind of using any pronouns, like mixed pronouns, she, her, he, him, they, them. And eventually started to get more in my discovery of my identity and realized that I want to change my name. So I changed my name to Dino Rowan. Then I also eventually realized I wanted to start T. And all during this time, I was also navigating and dealing with high school stuff. So yes, while I grew up in Boston and grew up in a pretty liberal home environment, not that I got bullied in high school, but I was ahead of the time. And I really kind of had to advocate on behalf of myself and really kind of be a be a dick. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. Like, no, this is my name. These are my pronouns. And if you don't respect, I'm going to go to principal's office about this, you know. And I was known mm-hmm. for that. I was known for, I'm sure I was an angsty teenager and I had a lot of issues going on. But no, I had to advocate for myself. And eventually, when I was 17, and for the longer my process, I realized I want to start testosterone. And, meanwhile, the whole time I've been talking to my parents about this and having as many open conversations as I could. And my parents were initially concerned about me starting T, because there's a really common misconception that, testosterone makes you more aggressive. And at the time, I had also been dealing with, some mental health issues, that run in the family as well. And they were worried that the myth of tea making you more aggressive was going to exasperate that, make that worse, basically. My parents did the very smart thing. They met with my doctor at the time, and who I was one of his first. He was like a queer youth-centric doctor, but I was one of his earlier trans patients. And they sat down with him without me in the room, you know, being an AC teenager, be like, man, you know, kind of, you know, Mom, Dad, how dare you ask that? you know, and I remember it happened the same night that I was actually going to mascot a football game. So I was also my high school mascot. Surprise there. No surprise there.
No surprise there, actually.
Yeah. Go Waltham Hawks. but I remember, yeah, I was like, they dropped me off at the football game. And then they went to go see my doctor. And by the time I got back from the football game, my parents were like, all right, so you can start. That was, I started November 3rd, 2011. That's when I started testosterone. Mm-hmm. And my mother will say to this day that it is the best decision she ever made for me as a kid under her care, as a minor under her care, because I did a complete 180 with my mood and my emotions, and I'm just a lot happier, and it's just a lot more one with myself. It's been going on 12 years now, so it's been a while.
Wow.
And
do you still get moments of, I like to talk about that. We never really talk about this when we talk about the trans experience ever, really, in any kind of, like, because the world is still predominantly, like, a cis-normative society, right? So we never talk about this subject, and I always love to do this when I have trans folks on. Do you still get moments of gender euphoria? Like, something that, like, you see something in the mirror, or some the way somebody treats you or refers to you in a way that just is really euphoric for you?
Kind of. So I guess I need to start off with the fact that the opposite, dysphoria, in my relationship with my body. So I never really had what, like, a lot of the common, like, I'm trying to explain it. I never really had a traditional sense of body dysphoria, where, like, looking yourself in the mirror and what the media depicts dysphoria to be. I grew up in a very body positive environment. Before I had top surgery in 2013, I remember looking at myself in the mirror, actually making some art pieces about it in college, and being like, all right, I have boobs. They're part of my body. I can't really do anything about this right now. They're not part of my identity, but they're part of my body. I never really got upset looking at myself in the mirror. But in terms of, so I've always been very full of myself in some aspects, and always like,
yep, I'm gathering that,
full of myself in terms of looks wise. But I try to be humble about that. And people tend to tell me I tend to exude confidence, and yes, you could say some of it is masking my insecurities, but in terms of my physical appearance, I've never really had any personal struggles with that regarding, like, me being attractive or feeling attractive. There are some deeper rooted things you can get into that with wanting to feel validated as a man and validated for my identity. I know I've always been easy on the eyes, but and this is gonna sound so cocky. I'm so sorry to everybody.
I love this.
but I've had a lot of issues with feeling validated or feeling like a real person, you know, beyond just being eye candy or being something to look at. You know, I always kind of feel like I've been objectified. And my euphoria kind of, like, yes, performing and kind of reclaiming the way people look at me and how they view me is very empowering, to be able to be like, no, I control how you see me. Because I have been, I've been the subject to some unwanted attention in my past from parties, and for me to be able to perform into you know, control that environment is really important to me. So that's kind of my euphoria. But yeah, that's
you know,
I can iterate more if you want.
No, I mean, that's fine. But I want to say something here, and it's really interesting. Gosh, I don't know. It's going to be a little bit of a therapy session call, it feels like, because I'm going to say a couple things that you may not agree with, and we can argue about them if you want to.
But,
the funny thing is, I don't necessarily see you as confident. I see you confident in a presentation versus like a confident person. And I see you confident in tasks. I see you confident in objectives. But I would say what I feel radiates off of you is comfort and content, like being content in what you're presenting and things like that. Because of our personal conversations that we've had, I noticed that you do, and even in this podcast, you have like somewhat like backtracked on a thing that you somewhat said to make sure you're saying the right word, right? To make sure you're using the term that you should be using and whatever. And I can tell that that has probably come from stepping into it too many times, to where you're like, oh crap, if I don't say it right, somebody's going to yell at me or something like that. And the reason I connect, I recognize that is because I have it too. Especially after I moved to Portland, to where I want to make sure I'm saying things the right way, because I do feel like people don't give enough grace for mistakes. I feel like people don't give enough grace for human beings being human. And as we grow and we try to learn as human beings, especially when we're like in our, even in our 20s and 30s, we're still growing and learning who we are as people, and we are going to make as many mistakes as possible. And for some reason down the line, we stopped giving grace for those mistakes that we make as humans. And I noticed it because of your language. And it's the funny thing about it is I find you to be a person that I think is insanely smart and confident in their morals. But I see that that was probably something that was innate and aggressively learned.
Yeah. Something that I had to deal with in my transition was how me being, you know, I have male privilege. I have, you know, white male privilege, and probably cis passing male privilege in certain spaces. And with that comes a lot of power and responsibility and mindfulness that is not taught. It is learned. And I have had the blessing of having my upbringing and navigating the world through the first part of my life as a female, and also being involved in the communities that I am in, and having the relationships that I do, and the friends and the family and the partners, and the life experience to kind of be more aware than a lot of cis men, as blatant as it is, to the things that the people face.
Yeah, I will. One thing that you said, I kind of thought that you liked to be objectified, just from the way that you kind of talk online. I didn't realize that you had you had like some underlying issues with feeling objectified versus like it just being an act. So like, for instance, I will name drop here. So like Craven Horrors, for instance, for a very long time, they were doing makeup looks and they were like very, very sexy, very male presenting sexy things. And they were consistently getting objectified and it was part of the character. And I didn't realize that how much of the character, like, because it can seep over into your personal life, especially when you're a male presenting performer. And then after you take the male makeup off, you're still male, right? And so it's like, people are like, well, I know this is just makeup, but I'm really attracted to this person, right? And so a drag amplifies a lot of our best qualities and our performance and our confidence. And so when you fit the bill for somebody, I can see how the objectification probably would be overwhelming at times, especially when you just want to kind of be seen as a person, especially when the makeup comes off.
Yeah. Like I, of course, you know, I love attention, as
yes, you do.
Many of us drag performers do. But no, you make a good point about that in terms of, yeah, I like kind of having say over when and how I'm objectified. I don't like, it's not that I don't know if I don't like it or not. It's just kind of a, I like having as much power over it as I can, as of a way of reclaiming my space and my experience.
You know, it's funny. I talked to my friend Babylon Brooks about this because she is considered a hot person as well. And we had this incident where we were outside of a strip club where somebody hit on her and it disgusted her. And then we went inside and somebody hit on her again. And it was almost the same thing, but she was like down for it. And so I had pulled her aside because I'm not a hot person, so I don't deal with these struggles. And I was like, what changed? And it's basically the thing that you just said. It's like, if I want the attention from this person because I think that they're attractive, then of course that's wanted attention because that's how I would like to be hit on. If I'm not really attracted to the person and they do this thing or whatever, then I don't consent to that action. And it took me a very long time to wrap my head around that, because like shouldn't it be the same for everybody? It's like, no, you like what you like, and your sexiness that you portray outwardly, you want it to be received in the way that you want it to be received, not in the way that other people want it to be received, because sometimes they will cross that boundary.
Yeah.
It's true. I just like, and I also had this incident too, where I recently had a person, and I said this in the podcast, where there was this guy at a brunch who just said, the way that I perform is implies that, like, you know, I'm going to sleep with this person, or like I perform with intention. And that is exactly what I wanted to try to portray. I never knew what it was called, but that's what it is. Like every action, every movement, it's supposed to be about this boldness that I want to carry with me. And like, so I get it. I mean, now that we've talked about it a little bit more, I do kind of get it. Even if you are conventionally hot, even if you're just wearing like sweatpants going to a grocery store, the way you want to be objectified, it's still your own.
Yeah, because you know, and I really also enjoyed listening to that piece from last podcast as well, with that brunch, kind of hearing about the acting with intention, or like kind of making a statement. I was going to say. I also love Babylon Brooks so much. love Babs.
She's my favorite.
Yeah. What were you just saying?
I talk a lot. I ramble. It's my thing.
I know. We both ramble.
Well, I do have something else that I kind of wanted to bring up though, too.
Yeah.
It's like, so.
I was going to say. Sorry.
Oh, no, go ahead.
In response to your thing. So, yeah, the kind of like, yeah, the being objectified kind of thing and not consenting to that. I've had a couple times where I've actually been working an event. I was contracted to do event photography for a new like gay night at some bar in Salem a couple of years ago. And I was working the event. I had like my cameras on me. I had like my, like a belt on with like a couple lenses and stuff on me. And some guy just came up and just groped me. And it's like, are you wearing a jock strap? And I was just like, I don't know what the hell to respond to him. And I was kind of just like, no, haha, you know. And I was like flabbergasted. I don't know what the fuck to think about it. But and I've had some other stuff like that happen before as well. And that kind of negatively influenced how I interacted with the cis gay crowd in Boston. And also, you know, coming from a lesbian space, you know, I you know, navigated the first part of my queer life as a lesbian, but transitioning, and there's a really tight knit community, you know, within those spaces, and then transitioning to male, I kind of lost that connection with those spaces. Unfortunately, a lot of there's still a lot of work to do on welcoming trans men in spaces. And I didn't feel like I fit in the lesbian space. I didn't feel like I fit in the gay male space. And there wasn't really a just general queer space like we have here in Portland.
Everybody's queer in Portland.
Yeah, there wasn't really a general kind of like no boxes. You know, there was like we had like flannel takeovers where it'd be like women who like women, but also some trans people can be involved too. I would go to those spaces and I would still get like, you know, bad looks from women, and because I was using the restroom I needed to use because I can't use a stall. So I was using the restroom I needed to use because I can't use a urinal. I can't pee standing up, and I'm still dealing with that today, actually. You know, not necessarily within like queer spaces here, but in general, I'm still having bathroom issues. 12 years on T in 2023. Like, I know we're dealing with all this other political nonsense right now, but it still comes down to the basic principles of just bathroom shit. No pun intended.
I totally understand having to deal with certain things. Like, cause like, you know, I was part of the first male couple to get legally married, and I know gay marriage has only been around for like 26 since 2016, I think, and so there are still things like, even though we've gotten further, right, we're not there, and people don't really see these terms as and like these changes in society fast enough, for the mindsets don't go around that they need to go like around fast enough. When I say my husband in certain spaces, because he is my legal husband, I may or may not get treated differently and deal with issues with that. And then there's still issues with like adoption and like all these other things. Like, so it's like, even though we're farther, like you're saying, we're still not there yet, even in more progressive and woke spaces. And one of the things I was going to mention to you, which is, I think I found interesting, is so because you're in a relationship with a woman currently, right? Mm-hmm. So I have to say this, and it's more meant as a joke. I used to really hate people like you.
I think it's hating me in general.
Yeah, well, I do. I'm just a garbage person. I don't even know why I'm interviewing you.
I'm the worst.
No, I used to get so mad because you're in a straight passing relationship. And I used to get so mad about that. And it's because of a deep-seated thing in myself, and I've talked about this on the podcast more times than I could possibly count, but when you come out as queer, and especially when you get legally married to so you have a gay presenting relationship, you're constantly coming out for the rest of your damn life, and I hate that feeling so much. I hate it so much. Like, it, the thing is, like, I have no capacity of straight passing relationship, and like, I think I yearn for that. Because there's so many times where it like is such a aggressive bump in the road for something that I think should be a great thing. Like, oh, we're all going to invite our spouses to go this trip, or we're all like at a work event and being like, oh yeah, you can bring your family, or be like, oh, hey, we're having the specialty XYZ. Bring your husbands and wives and blah, blah, blah. Like, and because like, people are starting to suddenly kind of now say spouse and partner, but not really. And like, so I used to get so mad for people that have all access to queerness that I do, but they have that one specific set of privilege that drives me the wall. And it's funny, I've moved on past it since I've not moved on past it, but gotten better because I moved to Portland and it's more queer. But where I was before, I had every horrible incident about having a partner because people didn't realize, and it would just cause so much. I probably have CPTSD because of it. It's so bad. But no, I'm like, I am happy for you, but that does suck too. Cause I had a friend who was bisexual, and she was married to a cishet man, and I'm also bisexual. And so we would talk about bi erasure a lot. And, you know, and I said, because I got to participate in Pride without any issue because I had a male partner. So I just look gay. So I get to have all of the benefit, all of the privilege of pride and like get to have as much fun. And she's like, I don't feel like I can take up as much space because I'm married to a man and I'm bisexual. And I would always tell her like, no, you have just as much access to this space as I do. Like, this is your home as well to feel free. And even if you're monogamous or non-monogamous, it's your choice to feel free in this space. So I definitely get it.
It's so funny that you say that, that Anna and I are straight passing. Anna is my partner. Because Anna is a very like masculine, like presenting woman. And she is not people use they, them for her a lot. But like her and I are both like the most, like our story is very like lesbian U-Haul queer, like Subaru lesbian U-Haul queer. I make a joke all the time. Like between the two of us, we have a Jeep and three Subarus. That's how gay we are.
Oh, that's so real gay.
Yeah, and I drove across the country in a U-Haul towing one of my Subarus. So like, I'm very gay.
Oh, wow. Yeah, no, you're very, very gay. But so here's a point about that too. And I want to, there's a point about that Subaru stuff too. Mm-hmm. I think it would be so, I complain about it now about not having that straight passing aspect. But I bet if I lost it, I bet it would feel like I lost a part of my identity and my soul. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, cause I am bisexual. Let's say me and Adam broke up or whatever. And I started dating a woman. Like I would still feel like I could go to like CC Slaughter's and like all these other places and just like be like with one of the girls again. And I bet it wouldn't feel the same. I felt like there would be aspects of it that would get taken away from me very violently.
People always ask me or people have asked me, if I had the opportunity, would I prefer to be reborn as a man? And I always say no, because I know it's juicy.
That's juicy.
Because the thing for me is my experience as a trans person, and kind of going off of what I was saying earlier, is so unique, and my relationship with this community is so unique that if I was any different, I would not be the same person. I value who I am. I value my experiences. I value my relationship with my community. And if I was a straight man, a straight cis man, I would not be the same person. And I don't
want to be an asshole.
I would. Yeah, I'd be more of an asshole than I already am. It's something that is very, very core to my identity and very, very core to who I am. And I know that I answer that as somebody who has a lot of privilege. But it still is core to who I am. And that's why I kind of very strongly hold on to my identity as a trans person and very loud and out and proud about it. Because very much like, no, you're going to introduce me as a trans king, a trans drag king. You're not going to just say, you know, like drag king, because that could encompass any gender, which is great. But I am a trans man and I'm very proud of that fact. And I'm proud of my journey.
I love your journey. I think that that's great. I don't know if I necessarily agree if I had those. I never think about that anymore, about if I was reborn, would I choose X, Y, and Z? I will say being black comes with a lot of adversity I do not like dealing with. And like people are like, but it made you proud. It made you stronger, you know, going through those struggles. Like a lot of black people are great because of the oppression that they've been through and the and all the stuff that they've gone through. And I think about that a lot. Like having an easy life, like you're talking about being born a straight white man, having an easier life and then dealing with the struggles or literally just oftentimes just decisions like that you make or you don't make and whatever like that. Would I want to have that kind of life? And sometimes it does sound nice, to be honest. It does sound nice with some of the BS. Like I'll be like on a TikTok, right? And I'll be like, cause you know, like Oregon right now has, I think over 7 trans like bills that have been introduced, right? Even in Oregon. And even though we're super woke here, but actually Portland is woke. I need to always say that Portland is woke. Everything around Portland is a little iffy at best.
Yeah. Just driving out, driving within like 10, 15 miles of Portland. You're like, oh shit.
It's 10:15. It's always the 10:15.
Hey, I drove, I crossed the border in Eastern Oregon, drove through that. That was exciting.
Yeah.
it was pretty, but it was exciting. And meanwhile, with, you know, the back, like a U-Haul and a gay ass Subaru with a bunch of like trans rainbow stickers all over it, like just cats and all sorts of stuff, like just everything that I'm about, you know, I don't hide it. And we've definitely gotten a couple looks here and there. But no, it's, Portland is very queer and inclusive and woke, as you say, but Oregon, anywhere outside of that, it's a bubble.
We're very much it's a bubble. It is a bubble. And so to answer the question myself, the thing is, I said this online recently, and I know that this sounds probably insanely enmeshed and toxic. I think nowadays, like, because of Adam, like, all of my things led me to Adam. Everything I've been through led me to Adam. And he is my universe. And like, so I don't think I could change anything, because I would never want to take the chance that I wouldn't have met him. Mm-hmm. And that sucks, because there's so much I would have changed.
Well, the way that I approach life and kind of how I've managed like my depression, anxiety, and all of my mental health stuff is like, I firmly believe that everything that's happened to me, no matter how big or small, good or bad, has made me who I am today. I used to have a puzzle piece tattoo on my arm that I got covered up with my cat tattoos when I turned 18. It was my first tattoo that symbolized that life was a puzzle. So if you're missing any piece, no matter size, shape, you know, color, wouldn't be complete. So that's kind of how I approach life, kind of how I navigate through difficult things, you know, and all of the things that I've dealt with. And that's kind of where I'm at. If I hadn't been dealing with all the things that I've been dealing with, I wouldn't have met Anna. And we both have such unique experiences that influence how we met each other and how we talk and how we communicate, and that make our relationship so special and so strong. And we balance each other out really well. And our unique relationships with gender identity and presentation, because yeah, she navigates the world as a butch woman, and like regularly gets issues with, you know, getting, we were on a road trip over the weekend, and she got like, was in some like Walmart or something and trying to use the bathroom, and some woman was just like looking her up and down and just like looking for boobs basically. You know. Mm-hmm. But on the opposite side of that, talking about but Anna also gets they them'd all the time in Portland, and there's nothing wrong with that per se, but Anna is very much not a they them.
You know, let's pause there for a second, because we're gonna have this conversation, Rob. You get angry about pronouns. We have had these conversations in dressing rooms now, and I like to always just have a little bit of like a let's get deeper moment, even though we're talking about transition and identity. Let's get a little bit deeper. You have and I'm going to guess what it is, and then you're gonna tell me what it is. I think that you have such a strong thing about pronouns because of like your high school experience where you had to force your identity down people's throats, to where now when you're older that you think it's almost like people are unwilling to try, maybe, or something like that, to just even get not like to like get to know somebody enough to even learn or something, like, because you get upset. You're like, you know, you don't, he actually, let me tell y'all, let's get the story out there to make it juicy for the listeners. We were in a dressing room and Rob pulls me and Autumn inside and goes, you know, my pronouns are he, him. You know that, right? And we're like, yeah. They're like, well, because other people don't really use it. They say they, them for me all the time. And I was like, I just use it just because everybody in Portland just forces us to use it constantly, no matter what your pronouns are. And I was like, but I always just try to go with the entertainer pronouns. But Rob was like, well, I just want to let you know, you can call me him. Why is that? Let's why is that, Rob?
Oh, hot seat. So it's I don't know if it's about my high school stuff, but I could see where you're coming from with that. It has to do with my transition and my identity. You gotta make me think. Caught me off guard here.
I love these questions.
My identity as a masculine trans man is it's different from somebody who might use they them on a regular basis. And that's yeah.
You
And
know, I'll add this while you're thinking.
yeah.
So, because I'm bigender, I don't know if you knew that, but as a bigender person, my pronouns, I prefer she, her, and he, him. I've never liked they, them for myself ever. But I don't talk about that because, you know, that's our introduction for the cis folks to be able to understand our community better, right? So if I say, don't call me that, that's going to make cis folks. Like it's gonna make it too hard for the cis folks because you know they're simple minded people sometimes. And and I allow it, but I have my dysphoria comes a lot of the line between my femme and my mask sides. Like when I'm getting into makeup is when it happens, and when I'm getting out of makeup, it happens. It's because there's a transition that happens. Like bigender people really do sit on those ends. They're not gender, even though they kind of do the definition of like gender queer and gender fluid. For me, it's not really fluid. It's like one or the other. And there's a lot of mental health issues that goes on when I transform between the two. And so like that's why the she, her for over there is really important because I put this work into this presentation. And like during my drag break, I'm getting a lot of euphoria as well because my beard's growing back in, which is how I like to present myself. My beard's growing back in, my eyebrows are fuller. The clothes I'm wearing make me feel really happy. I'm taking more pictures, like because of that. Like, but when I'm always living in that in-between zone because I have a lot of drag, where I'm always looking like a gremlin pretty much for most of the day. Sometimes it's really hard for me. And so I always talked about it, at least for myself, is I've worked hard for these pronouns. I really just want you to use them. When you use they, them on me, even though that's a completely valid way of referring to somebody, especially in the singular. But if you know my pronouns and are kind of unwilling to use them, it's almost like misgendering a person in that capacity because I've given them to you. I say I like them and they give me euphoria. But it's like you're unwilling to learn what they are. It's
Yeah,
like, it's literally the same conversation.
no, it's exactly, yeah, that's kind of, what I was going to say after that is like, yeah, I have not, I've put a lot of blood, sweat, and tears into earning this pronoun for myself, and people respect that pronoun. And we can talk a little bit later if you want about the me being a trans masculine person doing drag as a drag king. But yeah, I've have not, I have not fought my way up, into myself as Dino, my non-drag name, my non-drag self, to be they themed, and I respect that pronoun, but it is not something that I identify with.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. And actually, I do want to let's transition into that conversation because, like, you know, obviously we talk about a lot of drag on this podcast. So let's talk about your experience, the goods, the bads, the ups, the downs of being a, because we had you started, you know, you were already transitioning before you started drag.
Yes.
So let's talk about that, like, let's talk about barriers or hurdles that you had to overcome, or even hosts that were really crappy about, you know, doing X, Y, and Z. And let's talk about being a drag king and that experience as well.
When I started kind of doing drag more seriously, I don't take myself very seriously. Back in like 2018, 2019, I attended a like a drag king like workshop. In Boston, that I was like the only like transitioned like in quotes passing cis passing, masculine binary, also in quotes trans man in the class, and the I remember the makeup part of it was very much about how to paint on a male contour, and I was just like kind of like okay, I already have this, I already present. And I'm read as male. What do I do with that? So very early on, I kind of had to figure out what drag was to me, because they're what drag was to me as a drag king, as a trans masculine drag king, because, you know, it wasn't just about the male illusion for me. It was about what is drag to me, which is why I do a lot of like kind of character based things, or kind of like genderless things, which is kind of interesting going off the conversation about like the he him pronouns. I kind of, what was I saying? I was losing my track, train of thoughts. So for drag, I kind of had to, I didn't really have any kind of like guidebook or like YouTube tutorial about how to paint. Like there was nothing about that for people like me. So I've kind of had to, at the time, kind of had to look for like queen references or like some cosplay. And my drag is kind of a lot more storytelling and cosplay minded, you could say. Because also given my background in doing photography and video and art and documentary, I've often got told, especially a lot of my photo projects, that my work was very much about storytelling. So Rob is very much about telling a story and very visual and kind of, but also very fun with that and very family friendly as much as possible. But which I know is like kind of weird with my sexuality as well with you know, Rob can do sexy, you know, but Rob doesn't prefer to do sexy. Rob likes to just have fun. Not that fun isn't sexy. Sexy isn't fun, but
it can be.
Yeah. Yes. But I try to kind of avoid the very typical like king tropes in terms of like, I deliberately do not talk about waving a big penis around. I deliberately do not try to perpetuate toxic masculinity. You know, because to be honest, this is going to be juicy. It's boring to me.
Oh, wow. You know, that king, is juicy.
You know, there's like, but also the thing about like penises and stuff is like, as a trans man, I don't like, I like to kind of reclaim that space for myself. I don't talk about having a giant dick. I make a lot of small dick jokes all the time. And I kind of want to integrate that into my drag at some point to kind of be like, you know, some kind of reveal to people. Expect there to be a giant dildo somewhere, but it's like, if there's nothing there, that's the joke.
That's actually really, that's cool. Well, as a person who's always really enjoyed smaller penises, because I have, large dicks were always like, the funny thing is I'm barely bisexual. I swear to God, penises gross me out. But I've always preferred smaller penises. And like, I never even thought to ever have a concept in mind about, because it's true, toxic masculinity is like having the biggest dick. And then it's actually fed into like straight culture to where now women are like, yo, unless he's like hitting my back teeth. It's like, Jesus, like this.
Yeah.
And it's inherently transphobic anyway to talk about penis in that way in any capacity. So,
yeah, just to kind of like, it would just, yeah, it'd feel very against my morals to kind of like make like drag for me, drag king for me is not about waving my dick around and being an asshole. A lot of people think that that's kind of what kinging is, and kinging is people think that kinging is about like, yeah, perpetuating those toxic masculinity tropes, but that's not what I like to live by. And because for me, drag is an escape. And I feel like drag should, you know, you go to kind of to do satire on gender identity. And I don't feel like, perpetuating toxic masculinity tropes is satire.
It's not,
and it's not fun for the audience. The audience does not want to feel objectified. You know, they don't want to. You know, like everybody has their own drag journey, but it's, you know, it's not the way that I like to approach my drag. Going off of that, like, you know, in terms of the I do some sexy numbers. I do that because they're sometimes easy, but they're not really kind of what who Rob is. I had an incident earlier with there was a promotion for a show that was happening, and languages used describe me as kinky. And Rob isn't kinky at all. I actually ended up messaging the producers, and I was like, hey, can you change that language? And they did. Mm-hmm. Kind of caught me off guard. I don't really know where it came from, but I can see that with being, you know, having the sexy numbers I've done, I have worn like a harness and all of that. But I don't really
Tell you where it came from. I can absolutely tell you where it came from, because I get to see you, and you are a very beautiful person in and out of drag. Your promo photos is like you think are aggressively playful because you're dressing like Bob the Builder, right? But if you just take even a click into the kink community, you look like you're a dom. Like, that's what those photos also look like.
Totally,
like,
you're right.
So I'm just saying, like, that's where it came from. I have eyes, Robert, and I need you to understand. That may not be what you want to portray, but that's what also is from some of those photos.
Yeah, no, I feel you on that. and no, I understand that completely. You make a good point that, like, yeah, a lot of the part of a lot of perpetuating that is also like, you know, we look at the village people, like,
right,
you know, you know, and they're all perpetuating like, you know, gay stereotypes and kinky and all of that. So I totally, you know, that you make perfect sense with that.
So you're like, I didn't realize my photo was doing that to you, Coco. You're like, I'm so sorry.
And also, but there's also something where like, I can't, like, given a lot of my past trauma and whatnot, I have control issues with things sometimes. But a lot of that is also, I can't control everything. I can't control my image. I can only control what I say. I can control my image, you know, but I can't control how my image is perceived.
Yeah. Especially in a photograph, like especially in a photo shoot, like we think that we're giving something, and because we can't see outside of ourselves, because it's literally impossible to see outside of ourselves when we're looking at our own photo to see how other people are going to receive it. And I know that RuPaul always says, like, what other people think of you is none of your business. And that's kind of true. But there's also this thing of we're in entertainment, and so other people's opinion of us have to matter, because then we can't continue doing entertainment if nobody likes the entertainment that we're producing.
Yeah. Yes.
And even though I don't necessarily like referring to RuPaul in that, like, for the sage wise advice of all things drag, that's a really good point.
Yeah. No, RuPaul has a lot of good quotes that you know, irrespective of, we've also done a lot of work in this community and was very much an early trailblazer, but she is old and of her time.
Funny, I've never actually heard anybody give her, I don't mean this to, like, because this sounds like white savior treatment, it does, I've never actually heard anybody actually give her flowers, really. Like, people just tend to, like, demonize that. And, like, and the thing about RuPaul, like, not to get on this subject too much, but, like, the thing that bothers me is that, like, this was a black person dressing up as a woman and, like, in New York, like, during the 80s and doing this thing that we're doing today that's, to be honest, a lot more accepted. Like, that was dangerous.
Yeah.
And no, she was making a career out of it. Like, good Lord. Like, give the girl her flowers.
She's a trailblazer, and we gotta really respect a lot of our older queers, because, you know, a lot of folks my age, younger, older, you know, we have a lot to thank and to look up to folks who we're not really aware just what our peers have dealt with in the past. Like, I'm going to sound all kids these days, but kids these days have no idea how hard it was. Like, I had a decently okay time. It still was hard for me, but, like, to, like, my peers, older trans folks dealing with school and all that. And it's crazy about the politics these days right now, but and to be navigating that right now is crazy. To be RuPaul in the 80s and 90s, to be Leslie Feinberg, to kind of So Much Blues, to, like, that shit was hard, dude. You know?
Yeah, it was really, really hard and dangerous. The biggest thing is dangerous. Like,
yeah, very, very dangerous. You know, not to mention, you know, being, you know, a young black queen dealing with 80s and 90s and the AIDS crisis and making out alive and losing all your friends and all of that shit, dude. That's dangerous. That's scary. That's hard, you know?
Yeah. And we will never, like, because, like, I'm 36 years old and I was not affected by, like, personally affected by the AIDS crisis, obviously, because I'm too young. And, like, and even in that capacity, I knew about it as a kid because of, like, the older generation. But as, like, this newer generation, like, I think they're just a little bit too far removed to remember how dangerous that, like, those feelings were about what was going on in our country.
Yeah, yeah. It's again, I you know, growing up with and where I grew up, I was relatively safe, but I still had some run-ins and also, you know, having white male privilege, you know, I've had it pretty lucky. But I still feel unsafe at times. And I have felt unsafe in the past and a lot of, yes, there's a lot of stuff with the more prominent we are as trans and queer folks, in mainstream media and general consciousness, the more there's going to be a stronger pushback, which is why you're getting so much blowback right now, for a very variety of reasons. With he who must not be named anymore, past presidents, and all of that uprising of bullshit. But the taller we stand, the louder we shout, there's going to be the same equal and opposite reaction to that.
I love that.
Yeah, there's with any action, there's an equal opposite reaction. So the something that it's important to be mindful of is not to back down, not to step down, not to we can talk about being scared. It's the scary time for sure. Mm-hmm. But if we step down, if we stay silent, if we don't do anything, if we stop doing shows, that's how they win. I know that you, I think, last year at some point, didn't you have a protest outside of a drag queen story hour?
Yeah, so...
Sorry to bring that up.
No, it's fine. It's just... I'm a bad activist because I did not do enough after that event and I really could have capitalized on it. And I do mean capitalized in the right sense, not necessarily a capitalistic society, but So I had a drag queen bingo at Happy Rock Cafe in Gladstone, I believe is where it was. And we got raided by Proud Boys. There were more Proud Boys than there were people attending the event.
Jeez.
I had to call people, a couple of my friends, to come do a little bit of a rainbow safety net. And there were not enough of us there. And I was really worried about Sequin, my drag child, because she's a mom. And, like, if they wanted to get crazy or whatever, I was just really concerned about her. And then my partner showed up, and then I was then worried about him. And we tried to keep it fun and light and whatever, but I was kind of, like, hanging out with security because, you know, it's my event. And then Autumn and Sequin were running the event. And I was, like, kind of keeping cool with security and whatever, but they were just telling me the nastiest, most horrible things about myself. And also my car was kind of, like, parked close to where they were, and so I was like trying to make sure that didn't get messed with in any capacity, and like, and it was really overwhelming. It was really high. I had a lot of anxiety about the event because of it, and even when my husband showed up, it didn't really necessarily make it better. And then the city tried to get Happy Rock shut down, and that's kind of what they're dealing with, and that's why I feel like a bad activist, because I didn't really do more, because I don't think it's actually shut down yet. I should have been doing more to help them after being a person who was like in direct conflict with people showing up for an all ages drag queen bingo of all things.
Yeah. Where awful. Where is Gladstone in relation to where we are?
You know, I've only lived here for 3 years, so I have no idea. It's close.
Yeah.
But I will say this too, because the Proud Boys were based out of Washington, or like that's where they started, was in Washington, right? And you know, Portland is very close to Washington, and so Proud Boys do tend to show up every once in a while, and that's just the nature of where we live. They usually don't get too far because people think that they're monsters, and that's great. But yeah, so just so, because I know you probably haven't dealt with the Proud Boys in Portland yet, but you will. I mean, we all will. It'll happen.
I was driving back from my sister's wedding in Pittsburgh in actually 2020. She still had a wedding over that time. And I was driving through Jersey in my lesser of two gay Subarus. And I like pulled off to go get some Popeyes because I really wanted some chicken. And I ran into the Trump truck rally
Oh,
going
wow.
through Jersey. And I, me being me, I flipped them off. Nothing to see. They saw, like, try to basically push me off the road. So I pulled over and I went, I kind of like slowed down and kind of went to go to the grocery store instead. But I was like losing my mind because that shit's scary, dude. Like, I have dash cams. I have all this shit. I witnessed this shit. But like, if you are a small car or anybody and you are one amongst a bunch of fuck boys, like, I can only imagine where you were dealing with, but like it was scary for me, dude.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And I mean, I tend to be very combative and very I like to start shit sometimes, but I learned a lesson not to just to basically kind of ignore them and not get them what they want because yeah, that shit's scary. Anna's like has a Jeep and she's kind of is somewhat involved in the Jeep scene, but I turned around to the Subaru scene because there's a lot more welcoming with that stuff. So we're still kind of involved in some of it. Like it's still weird for us to go to like car meets
Wow.
and be around some of that stuff. Because we're also pretty like outside of drag in our work life, we also do a lot of like car stuff and all of that. And it's interesting actually being in Portland, there's actually a lot more queers who are into cars out here, which is really cool. So yeah, there's a lot more nuance to being a queer person here, which is nice.
No,
Sorry to go
I
off
that
on
makes
that.
a little. No, that makes a lot more sense. I have one more question for you. Actually, I have two more questions for you before we kind of wrap up here. So when it comes to being a, do you feel like, and I don't mean to put words in your mouth, but do you feel like when you're a drag king at a show that's most predominantly queens, that do you feel like, actually, I kind of want to know about the Boston scene. Did you feel othered? Like when you got introduced, like they had to do a long intro to prep the crowd for a drag king.
Yeah, it's always kind of like, and I don't know if you've done it. I don't think you have, but it's kind of like, so we always like blah blah. Next up to the stage, and we, you guys have all heard of drag queens, but we have a drag king in town now. Please get ready for this drag king, Rob the Builder. It's always kind of a whole like big fanfare to have a king on stage. Oh, something so special, and it's kind of like. Great, I'm just performing, I was the drag king scene in Boston. I haven't been involved in it in a while, but was a lot smaller and a lot kind of the drag scene in Boston is a lot less encompassing, less inclusive. There's a very specific type of drag that is in Boston, and the kings there are a lot more traditional kings. But the drag here in Portland is a lot more, there's a lot more space here.
There's a lot of space.
Yeah, and there's a lot of different types of drag that exist here in Portland. That it's not just your entertainer side of things. You can be an artist as well. I think you were talking a little bit about that in your last podcast.
Yeah, an artist versus an entertainer.
Yeah, and I approach my art as an entertainer side of things. And I do a lot of like, not top 40, but a lot of crowd pleasers. And I don't really do any kind of like alt drag or spooky stuff or something that's too like high concept. I want to essentially do something that's a little bit more high concept, in terms of like making more of a statement of some kind. But me just existing and as a queer person, as a drag artist, is making a statement.
Yeah, that's kind of how I felt about it. And like, here's the thing though, too. Like, I do very, I guess high concept would be a stupid word for me, but it would be, I guess it's in the realm of high concept when it comes to like Black activism in my drag, like, cause I have a lot of mixes that have like a lot of speeches and like things like that and have moments that are like that, but I don't do necessarily like costuming that wraps itself around that, this thing that I'm about to do. And I'm aware of that, like, cause it's just not my drag. I love when I see that stuff, but it's just not necessarily who I am. I like to entertain. That's the reason I got into drag, was the entertainment side. I wanted to sing and dance and laugh and have a couple of cocktails. Like, that's kind of what I got into it for. And I want to keep doing that in different ways and then letting my voice outside of drag, like, wow, she's really powerful on the internet. Oh, she's a drunk girl at the bar. Like, I like that stuff. That's kind of what I appreciate. Yeah. So when you mentioned, that there is a lot more space here, and I think that you fit in well with this scene because you offer so much. I actually made this, I was telling Autumn about this for one of the shows we did recently. I just did intros for the people. I didn't, and I use entertainer a lot, but I stopped saying drag king or drag queen just in general. Not because Portland has a very big drag thing scene. It's also because I don't think that the audience needs to be prepared anymore. I think that they can just enjoy what they enjoy and don't enjoy what they don't enjoy. And we don't have to prime them that this is an AFAB queen and this is, drag king, it's drag queen. Like, you don't need all of these qualifiers unless it's part of the identity of the character. Like, I think that that's when it really matters. So the audience is like aware that this is something that you want them to know. Otherwise, it just feels like you're lessening the art form, at least to me.
Yeah. And that's kind of like, that's kind of where earlier on in my drag journey, I kind of, and my personal identity stuff as well, I would always have people like, you know, announce this is a trans man, because that was part of my stating where I was at, you know.
Yeah.
And I think personally, being in Portland and having a different relationship with how people perceive me, in terms of just I'm a lot more visibly queer here on purpose. I can go off on that a little bit, but I don't feel it's as necessary to kind of like to demand to command that. So it's why I'm a little bit better about, like, you know, having people not use he, him for me all the time. With, you know, that it was kind of a, hey y'all, I'm here, I'm a trans man, and that's what makes me valid. It was kind of a whole, this is what makes me valid in this scene here. What I felt like that made me valid as in the scene in Boston was people, I didn't feel like they were as supportive if somebody was a cis male doing masculine presenting drag. There's not as much space for that in Boston, at least as I left it. There's a lot more space for that here in Portland, a lot more space for just entertainers in general, as you were saying. So I don't feel like I need to constantly out myself all the time to be valid here in Portland, which is really great. And kind of off of the thing about, I know we're trying to wrap up soon, but with Anna and I, and you think that we're straight passing, we're very much not straight passing, you know. We're straight passing if you look out on paper, like male and female. But being in the queer scene, like, you know, and out and about, like, as I said, Anna is a, but she's read as a butch lesbian. I am read as some type of man.
You are read as a pocket gay, bro.
Yeah.
I don't know why you didn't want to say that, but that is what it is.
So together we make our, you know, we are very queer presenting of some capacity. And I've done a lot of work on myself to be okay with not having to constantly out myself as a trans man, though it is part of my identity. So I will wear the flag pretty prominently, right, whenever I want to, because it's my life. It's my story to tell. Anyways, yeah. Sorry. Next question.
Last question is this. I asked this question. I always ask people to prepare for this question, but you've listened to my podcast. So I want you to choose. So say you get into a bar fight and you need three drag artists to help you win the fight. So you have to choose three drag artists from the Portland scene who you would have on your team to help you win the fight. And you have to say their name and why.
Okay. I think I would have Babylon Brooks because Babs likes to post all of her gym selfies and we know that she's buff. Mm-hmm. And I would probably have you because you are fierce and do not back down and you always have like my back and I appreciate you a lot.
Curb stomp.
Mm-hmm. Curb stomp. And the third person. I'm trying to think. Who else would I have? I hadn't prepared for the question. I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. No, you still have to do three. I can't let you win this without the three because we need the three. So think about the person who, and you can always have the supporting character role, somebody who's cheering you on while, you know, we're knocking heads.
Yeah, I think I would choose probably Essie Hex because Essie is the sweetest, most like cool aunt mom like character in my life, and I have a lot of like cool aunt moms that I hold very near and dear to me, and Essie would kind of just feel like, all right, I got you, you know, like whatever you need, I'm here for you. And awesome. I don't think she would do any of the bar fighting, but she would be here. She's also like a nurse. Works in the medical field. She'd be able to help us out with any if we got any boo-boos.
Aw, that's sweet.
Yeah.
So that officially brings us to the end of our podcast today. Rob, tell the kids your socials.
You can find me at rob.debuilder on Instagram, which is at rob.dabilder on Instagram. And that's kind of my main socials that Rob uses.
Perfect. Yeah. So I'll have a picture of Rob on the website and I'll have a link to their Instagram on the website as well. And you'll definitely get to see Rob all around the Portland area doing the things that Rob does, especially because they don't understand what a photo looks like when it's kinky and not cool. This is a say bye to the kids, Rob.
Bye. And bye. Thank you so much, Coco, for having me. And I appreciate listening to you and I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
Hi, everybody. This has been another episode of A Gem of a Secret Podcast. The host of A Gem of a Secret Podcast is Coco Gem Holiday. Our music was provided by Touche Douche and Party Favors. You can follow them on Instagram at Touche Likes Beef and Party Favors Music. Please follow us online at www.agemofasecretpodcast.com. That is a J-E-M of a secret podcast.com or anywhere you listen to podcasts. Our episodes are released every Thursday. Bye-bye.